Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, unfortunately, Braves country, we lost another great Brave. The Braves putting out a statement about Bob Horner. And Horner was the first overall pick in 1978. Skipped the entire minor league system. Mm-hmm. Made his debut directly in the majors. He was a hell of a player. And we've had this conversation with our buddy Dale Murphy, Mike, about what Horner was and the kind of competitor he was. He was Atlanta's first player to ever hit four home runs in a single game. And the Braves also state that, you know, he was a National League Rookie of the Year in 78 and then NL All-Star in 82. But him and Murph, man, in the 80s, early 80s, in the mid-80s, they were the guys.
Oh, as kids who grew up going to, you know, Fulton County Stadium, he was one of the most popular players. Remember, as a guy that went to watch the Braves as the visiting team at Shea, he was always a guy you wanted to see, just like Murph, you're right, man. And hit a home run in his first game, just a stud, right, as you said, right out of Arizona State, right to the show.
Stud. So condolences going out, but man, it's been tough here. We were just talking about the patches and the things that the Braves are trying to do to honor those that we've lost. And, you know, I don't know if there's ever the right thing, but you kind of want to make a statement with what you're trying to, you know, the legend and remember of somebody and what they meant to the organization. We're talking about Bobby Cox, obviously. Right. Bob Horner, we were talking about Ted Turner. Mike and I were just having this conversation.
Yeah, just because, you know, being at the ballpark and seeing the tiny six in the back of the hat, I just want a little bit more, you know, for Bobby Cox and more for Ted. But either way, in the case of Bob Horner, he was 68 years of age.
All right. Tough stuff, man. We have a lot going on today, guys. More news on James Pierce Jr. If you have not heard, stay there. We will get back into that story. It is a big deal for the Falcons as they continue to get ready for another round of OTAs. Coaches speaking tomorrow. We'll have it for you right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. But right now, we got to talk about what's going on around the SEC. Well, our guy, Connor Riley, is here. It's the spring meetings. I said that Greg Sankey is standing 10 toes down. He has, you know, made a stance when it comes to where he's at with the college football playoff. I want to know when he said that they're committed to the SEC championship game because they have contracts. Was that tongue in cheek? I mean, because we know, Connor, these contracts don't mean anything. When they come up with these new ideas of expansion, stuff just goes away. Connor? All right, we'll grab him
in just a
second.
The Big Ten doesn't want you to hear what Connor has to say.
I was going
to
say, they've snatched
him. Jamming the frequency. We'll get him back in just a second. But,
yeah, these spring meetings are going on down there in Destin, guys. They do it every year, but Sankey obviously is the first one to speak, and then we'll tell you what Kirby had to say as well, as we'll get to Connor here in just a second. But he said they don't want to go away from the SEC championship game. Mike, we know if they go to 24, you can't do both.
Again, it's just you're going to be punishing yourself, and you're going to be on the road. The idea that, you know, you play in the SEC championship game, maybe pick up a third loss and find yourself having to go to, I don't know, Wisconsin. You know, that don't seem right either. But it's a tradition. And because the SEC started it and it's become so successful over the 30-plus years, going all the way back to Legion Field, you know, Georgia Dome, Mercedes-Benz, it just feels bigger than all the other championship games combined. It just has.
No, it does. We'll ask Connor about that as well as what Kirby was talking about because is he there? All right, Connor, let's get back to it because I was asking the question about Greg Sankey saying the SEC championship game, they want to continue it. And I just said, he basically said, well, we have a contract. Is that enough?
I think it is. I think it's important to keep in mind that the SEC has a very strong relationship with ESPN. And when you look at, say, like the Big Ten and what they're possibly doing with their, you know, push for 2014 playoff, they've divided up their television revenue among CBS, NBC, Fox. ESPN runs everything when it comes to the SEC, and because they are so strong together, I think there is a desire to see that continue, to see that game continue. The reality is it also brings in a ton of money for the conference. It brings in consistently great viewership for the conference, where this past year, yes, the Big Ten championship game, I believe, had more television viewers, but that's because it was number one versus number two, and more often than not, that SEC championship game has been a de facto college football playoff. playoff game in terms of determining who gets into the college football playoff field, and in recent years how it shakes out. So I think that the SEC understands that their championship game means a little bit more. I do that intentionally there. And I think because of that, they're not in a rush to see that game go away, so long as we still sort of try and figure out what we want to do with the college football playoff and what that system and setup ultimately looks like.
It's funny because, you know, the argument for it, and they've talked about an article in the Chicago Sun-Times basically saying that they feel that the is ironic. They feel the college football playoff committee, you know, doesn't really respect them and they need to get locked in bids. Where you and I always argue, and Carl too, that, you know, the SEC's got the strongest schedule and the best, toughest atmospheres from top to bottom, and they don't seem to get the respect from the college football playoff committee.
Right, and so ultimately, and I think that's where, even turning to today with what Kirby Smart had to say, there's real frustration, I think, from his perspective of how the College Football Playoff Committee views strength of schedule. And because that's what it is, and because that's how we've seen things play out, where that committee just counts the losses and says, oh, if you've got three, that's less than two, and the team with two is going to get in. And I think that there's real frustration there from the SEC, from Kirby Smart in particular, of, that's not what's best for the sport. Like, we want to see teams go out and challenge each other, go out there and reward teams that play difficult schedules. And yes, you might have a loss or two along the way, but at the same point in time, you're also giving fans the type of thing that they want to see. And the reality is, this college football playoff committee has not shown that to be rewarded. And I'm going to be super interested this year in seeing how the SEC is viewed and treated now that they are on a 9-game conference schedule, the same as the Big Ten, even though I think across the board, we would all agree that, one, the SEC is just a tougher conference top to bottom, and two, the SEC plays a considerably stronger non-conference schedule than the Big Ten does, and so I think that's important to factor in as well there as well.
Connor, help me understand what Kirby was saying today when he says, I've said this for a long time now to our president. I've been a huge advocate that if we can't find rules that everybody plays by, then we should play on our own. I'm not afraid of that. Is he in fact saying we would stand alone and do our own thing? Like, that's where he's at?
I think that's where the University of Georgia is. I think what Kirby said today really echoes what Jerry Moorhead said last week at Georgia's Spring Athletic Board meeting, where it's become abundantly clear Congress is not going to provide the relief that I think the heads of college football are looking for, which to anyone with a brain, I don't think is surprised by that. And so now you find yourselves in a spot where, okay, what does the SEC want to do here? And I think there is a desire from Georgia for the SEC to do what is best for the SEC, or do what they believe is best for the sport, and have the idea that everyone else will potentially follow along there. It's worth pointing out, as the people at Georgia do, that back during COVID, there was a lot of pushback to playing a college football season that year, and the SEC stood firm, and they ended up playing that year. And I think everybody agrees in hindsight that was probably the correct decision that was made there. And I think ultimately, I think these conferences are going to have to make their own individual decisions there. Where my skepticism with some of this comes is, you look at some of the biggest offenders in terms of what they're spending on rosters, in terms of how they are circumventing the cap. A lot of those come within the SEC, your LSUs, your Texas A's, your Texas A&Ms in that regard. And I'm going to be curious to see, you know, Jerry Moorhead, when he was asked it last week, said that the conference is going to have a strong enforcement arm in that. Are schools like Ole Miss really going to subject themselves to that when they've been sort of skirting the laws as is? And it's led to a lot of success, as you saw with Ole Miss getting the college football playoff semifinals a year ago. It's one thing for me to hear Kirby Smart and Jerry Moorhead talk about breaking away, but until I see the rest of the SEC have a buy-in similar to that of what we've seen from Georgia, I am skeptical that that's ultimately going to happen.
I keep saying to you, and I talked to you know, Mike Griffith from Dog Nation, like the old-school approach that Kirby uses as far as Georgia's business model. I saw that Jeff Santel had this article today about where the recruiting's at. Now, again, it's early, but May 26th, according to 24/7 Sports, Georgia's currently the 33rd best recruiting class. Rivals has them at 16. Jeff asks, what is going on with the 27 class? So,
hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
What is going on with the 27 class?
Yeah, I think Georgia finds itself in a world where things are changing, where in the past you were able to every year sign a top five class. And that's what Georgia had done. They, for almost a decade, signed a top three recruiting class every single year. Because of the money and the way that that is tied up now and the way that these rosters are constructed, the idea that you're going to go out there and sign the best class every year or one of the three best class every year, I just don't know if that's the case anymore. You look at a team like Alabama who signed a top five class last year. They're down in the 50s right now with the way that things are being set up. So I think that there are certain years where you're going to be able to spend a little bit more in recruiting because on the back end you have more coming off the books. And I'm sure that this economic talk is glazing over the eyes of the readers right now, or the listeners, excuse me. I do think that with Georgia, like, yeah, they're going to get guys that want to come play here. They're going to be top-rated recruits because that's what Kirby sort of knows how to do. But the idea that they're going to get the best recruiting class every year, I think that's pretty clearly sailed. You saw that last year when they signed, I think, the number six overall class. And the reality is that's probably what Georgia's going to try and finish on a year-in, year-out basis now in that sort of 6-7-8 range as opposed to that 1-2-3 range every year.
Wow.
Yeah, but Connor, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you're competing for championships and you're in the playoff, I guess it doesn't matter. That just sounds weird. That sounds like I don't have to strive to be the or have the number one class anymore because that's not where it's at, right? We're just going to go get the guys we want to get, and wherever the chips fall, that's where they fall. Our fan base shouldn't be upset when they don't hear that we're top three.
Right, and, you know, it's important to note, you know, for so much of Kirby Smart's time here, it was a four-team playoff, and so you were incentivized to have a greater collection of talent because getting into the college football playoff was all that more difficult. With 12 teams, the need, I think, to sign a top-three class, regardless of how you feel about whether or not that's feasible, it has lessened a little bit where you've seen teams that haven't signed elite classes every year somewhat consistently get into the college football playoff. You've seen Indiana do that in back-to-back years, and they haven't sniffed a top 15 recruiting class there. So I think it's important to know, especially in the event that it expands to a 24-team college football playoff, to get into the playoff every year, which I think is the goal at a place like Georgia, you don't, I think, need those top classes anymore. And as we saw last year, you know, teams getting hot at the right time, a Miami team that right. came very close to winning a national title, an Ole Miss team. Those teams were not more talented than Georgia, but they were able to get the right break at the right time, something Georgia didn't get last season.
How much pressure on Kalen DeBoer? Because I saw him speaking today. Basically, he was asked the same question about what's the right number of a college football playoff, and he kind of equivocated, saying, for me, it's not really about a number. It's just trying to win every football game. So how many football games is Alabama going to win this year?
You know, he did sign a new contract this offseason. I think his buyout is like $67 million.
Oh.
And there's a part of me that's skeptical that it's going to be paid if things don't go well. But I do think that he is still under some pressure here, where, again, they don't need to win a national championship this year. They find themselves in a really tough place post-Nick Saban, where that first class, I think, was really wiped out by the transfer portal, and that put them in a hard place where, not dissimilar, I think, to where Georgia was a year ago. If they can sort of weather the year, maybe win a few games they shouldn't and get into the college football playoff at the end of the year, they're maybe better set up for a national championship run next year. But when you're Alabama and you've won as much as they've won, I don't think that the fan base is going to want to hear that. And if you lose games in the manner in which, like, Alabama lost last year, just getting absolutely blown out in the SEC championship game by Georgia and then losing again to Indiana in the Rose Bowl in a 38-3 beatdown, like, if you keep having those types right. of losses where it's not all that competitive, the temperature on Kalen DeBoer's seat is going to get very, very hot. And while he might not be fired this year, I think moves might be made to be put in place where it's going to be more difficult for Kalen DeBoer to get the resources he needs to win at the level he needs to.
So I say this all the time. What has he done? Like, who was coming to get Kalen DeBoer? And I get it. These coaches get raises based simply on the fact that there's a chance that somebody may call. But honestly, like, were they that – I'm talking about Alabama. Were they that afraid yep. that they wanted to do this kind of extension? That's a lot of money. You went from a little bit of money to a lot of money trying to get out of this deal, if you want to.
And look, the timing of it was Michigan after the Sharon Moore stuff, right. I think pretty clearly made a run at him. And the timing of that, where it would have been, I believe, mid to late December of them trying to go out there and find a coach if DeBoer had left for that Michigan job. I think the timing of that was something that Alabama felt hamstrung them, but I completely agree with you, Carl. Like, if Kalen DeBoer wants to leave at a place where Alabama, who's had more success than anyone, who has shown that they're going to spend and do whatever it takes to win a national title, and if that's not good enough for Kalen DeBoer, then Kalen DeBoer's probably not the right guy to lead your program.
Right. I mean, to pay that much. Here's a cookie for not going to Michigan. That's a hell of a cookie.
Yeah.
It's a big cookie.
Yeah.
Hey, Connor, before we let you go, I want to ask you this. The impact on the regular season. I know we've talked about this decision about, and by the way, Greg Sankey said he does not believe anything will be resolved at the spring meetings this week, even though they're going to talk about this stuff. The impact on the regular season. Give me your outlook on that. As we know, this is probably going to happen. How does that affect the regular season of SEC football?
I'm going to be really interested this year with it being a 9-game schedule. And I think everyone clearly understanding now, as it's unfortunately been pushed here for a couple of years, like the playoff just determines so much in terms of the way that the season goes. There's like a regular season loss staying in the same manner that it would have in years past. And even in a 12-team era, like you think of the Alabama loss in 24 for Georgia or the Ole Miss regular season loss that year, like, there's a lot of unhappiness there. And I wonder, you know, and I think Georgia's going to win a lot of games this year. I think they're going to go 11-1, and I don't think 12-0 is off the table. But I think you also saw last year as well, you know, yes, Georgia plays big games, but games against like Kentucky just did not register in the way that I think they would have in the past. And so it's sort of like the big games are bigger than ever and they mean a lot more. But if it's not a big game, like the appetite is just not there at all from the fan base, mind you. And so I'm going to be really interested this year as we go another year into the 12-team playoff and we get a better understanding of what's in line. Like, Georgia's got a game against Missouri in mid-November. It's the last SEC home game. But as we sit right now, unless Missouri has a really great season, which is going to be tough for them as they sort of work through what goes on with Ahmad Hardy, like, I don't know what the appetite for that Georgia game is going to be. If South Carolina's fired Shane Beamer at the end of the season when Georgia goes to visit there in September, you know, or in November, excuse me, what does that game look like from an interest standpoint? And I think that's where it really starts to hurt. It's like Georgia's game against Oklahoma, its game against Alabama, like, that's going to be huge. But like a home game against Auburn, a team that hasn't been very good lately, like, you wonder, that's where I think you really start to show the impact of an expanded college football playoff. And if it goes to 24, I think those non-big games feel even smaller, which I think is a real problem for the sport.
That's 100% right. I agree with you, man.
Yeah,
right,
it's a great way to put it. Connor, as always, tell the people where they can read your stuff, man.
Yep, you guys can follow me on Twitter at @KConnorRiley. Tomorrow we're going to get the game time announcements for Georgia's first three games of the season. So even though it's the middle of summer, we've still got a ton of college football news coming out.
All right, great stuff. Again, appreciate you stopping by as the commission and all the coaches are down there for the spring meetings. Connor, have a great day, man. Appreciate you.
Yep, thanks, guys.
All right, coming up, is there a little bit more urgency maybe to bring in some more guys? We're really good, but are we going to go for it the way we should? We'll discuss as the Braves are on the road and a new series starts tonight. It's Dukes and Bell.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.